Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 319, and I'm going to talk about experienced shooters. I'm not going to use the word advanced shooters. That's kind of a dangerous word, I think, don't you? I think that, you know, when you start to use the word advanced shooters, then some people, they say, oh, hey, I'm an advanced shooter, and guess what? I don't really need to know anything. I got a chance to talk to a couple of experienced shooters that recently took the class that Ben and I taught in Dallas. And these are people that I know have trained significantly with handguns and rifles. I got a chance to get on Skype and interview them and talk to them about what kind of changes that they have realized that they want to make to their practice and training regimen and just to their overall shooting. Again, it's much different when you have training or when you have skills that are obtained somewhere else. It's much different when you apply them in a pressure situation, which is exactly what training does, is it kind of applies some pressure to you. So Joe and Dave are going to join me in just a minute. I want to talk, now that the whole Baltimore riot situation is kind of over, I wanted to see how this thing played out before I made any comments on it. I'm not going to make any comments on the political nature of what's going on and why these people were rioting and protesting and whether they should have been or shouldn't been or whether their feelings have merit or don't. I'm not going to touch all that stuff. What I am going to talk about is this. Why weren't more citizens armed? Why didn't more of those business owners that were being looted and destroyed, why didn't they have firearms? I think you know the reason why, but I'm going to get into that. You know, there was one story of a couple of business owners that stood out in front of their property with a baseball bat. And they successfully defended their property, or at least as much as could be. But what if they would have had a gun instead of a baseball bat? What if they would have been able to defend their business with a firearm? Perhaps they might have been more effective. Perhaps if more people would have been out there with firearms, not just them, but if it would have been lots of people with legally owned, legally possessed firearms and legally defending the property that they have, that they own, maybe, think about it, maybe that situation wouldn't have turned out like it did. What do you think? Now, we all know where Baltimore is, or most of you should. I may have some people that are listening to this and are not real familiar with the geographical makeup of the United States, especially those of you who are international listeners. In Maryland, there are some pretty strict gun control laws. And that's pretty much where I'm going to leave it. But think about it. If the citizens, if the right to own and bear arms, to keep and bear arms, was less restricted in the state of Maryland, and it was more encouraged by business owners and property owners and homeowners, do you think that maybe they would have been able to repel some of the violence and the looting and the vandalism and the destruction? Think about that. So I wanted to wait. I wanted to wait until the situation was largely over or completely over before I mentioned anything about that. Okay, let's bring on Joe and Dave, some experienced shooters.
Good afternoon. This is your captain speaking with just a little flight information. Coming up on the left, we're going to be catching a glimpse of the Grand Canyon. On the right, you can be able to see the Hoover Dam in just a few minutes. We're flying at an altitude of 37,000 feet, and our airspeed is 400 miles an hour. Couple little facts here. I'm packing a Colt King Cobra. That's a 357 caliber firearm with a black rubber grip and a 6-inch barrel. Also, the co-pilot is carrying a Kimber custom defense pistol with all the bells and whistles you'd expect from a custom gun of that kind, with an alloy frame and bevel treatment on the entire gun. And our chief flight attendant, Roger, has a Ruger Bearcat 22 with a hand-fluted cylinder. All three are capable of piercing body armor at a distance of up to 27 feet, and it can put a hole in human bone and flesh the size of the Grand Canyon, which, by the way, is coming up on the left-hand side of the plane, so just sit back and relax and enjoy the rest of the flight.
Okay, this episode, I've got two listeners, very active listeners, and two guys that have been great contributors also. Joe and Dave, welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Now, the reason I brought these guys on is Joe and Dave just took our Beyond Concealed Carry class on Saturday, April 18th, up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So, did we run you guys enough?
Oh, yeah. We were pretty burnt out by the time the day was over.
Yeah, it was a full day, that's for sure.
Well, let me compliment both you guys. You're good shooters. Obviously, it was pretty noticeable that you have practiced all, if not most, of the techniques that we taught. But both of you offline told me that you got some things out of the class. Dave, let's start with you. What did you get out of it?
Well, the first thing is I went with one of those new Alien Gear holsters, and, you know, I've worn it, but the biggest thing I got out of it is I got into my comfort zone of the repetition of drawing and of reholstering, and doing that repetitively. I tried it a little bit at home, but there's a difference when you're at home and you're doing it with a unloaded weapon versus out on the range with a loaded weapon. You know,
it's very real.
It's very real, yeah. I mean, you know, you always treat a weapon as it's loaded, but, you know, there's a difference when you're looking in the mirror and drawing and you're actually out there and you're engaging a target. I found that, you know, in the repetition throughout the whole day of all the exercises that we did, you know, it really, really got my confidence level up in my new holster, you know, because I carry a fairly large frame pistol, so... you know, it also enlightened me as to a couple adjustments that I needed to make to it. That was the first plus I got out of the class.
Right
away.
Dave, what adjustments do you think you need to make to that holster?
I want to bring the angle. I want to adjust the angle and the height in my waistband. I want to bring the height up just a little bit, and I'm thinking about cantering it a little bit more towards where my hand would draw it, so I'm just going to tilt it a little bit more, and I want to try that and see how that works. I want to do that out at the farm and see how that works for me.
Yeah, so. Joe. Well, good. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate that. Joe, what's your biggest takeaway?
I actually came away with a couple. One, I carry quite often, but the pulling from concealment, I'd never really done much of that, because once I get to the house and I'm out here on the ranch, I'm pretty open with it, so it's not a big deal.
Right.
Pulling from concealment, I'd never really done a bunch of. That was one. Another thing is, I was under pressure by my instructor to do it, get my shots off once the class got running, and I found that we both run Springfield XDs in .45 full size. The difference between our two pistols is Dave's does not have a safety, where mine's unusual, and it does. I caught myself once or twice not disengaging the safety.
Uh-huh.
So, and usually that's my regimen, but I'm not under pressure. But, you know, I went to pull the trigger, and as soon as it wouldn't pull, I knew what I did, and I disengaged it. But had that been real life, it would have been a different scenario.
Yeah.
So,
well,
really, we shoot, but we shoot like people shoot paper targets. They're relaxed. There's no big deal. We need to shoot more under pressure, which what we'll probably do is one of us will be standing behind the other, screaming and distracting and doing that kind of stuff to put pressure on us so we can shoot under pressure. That's something I got was between that, like I said, I hadn't pulled from concealment very often. I got a lot better at that. I really did. I need to do more of it. We need to start doing that and putting a cover on to add that level of difficulty.
Yeah.
I never thought I could say that my trigger finger was sore. Because 2 days later, my fingers are sore.
You know, Joe, you hit on something very important, and that is you brought up several times, you know, shooting under pressure. And a lot of people don't realize what happens. And, you know, when you come to a class like the ones that Ben and I teach, or really most of the decent firearms classes out there, they are going to put you under pressure. And I hear a lot of comments from people that say stuff like, oh, I've practiced this before, you know, or I can practice this at home if you're one of those that has the luxury to do that. However, do people at home put you under the kind of pressure that an outside instructor is going to put you under? And you have... You know, that's probably what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you guys, I mean, we've known each other for a while, and, you know, but so we're joking around, and you know, and you and Ben, we're picking on me and Dave because we've known each other for so long, but there's still that pressure. So, yeah, I mean, you guys are picking on us and you're giving us a hard time, but the reason is because you wanted us to pull something away from the class, and we did. So, yeah, there was quite a bit to be learned there.
And you have to remember, see, Joe, you just brought it up where, you know, you found yourself once forgetting to disengage the safety. That's what happens to us under pressure. Our minds go to mush.
More than once. And one time, Ben made fun of me. He's like, yeah, that's why you need a Glock, or whatever it was he said. And then I went on to him about his Tupperware gun. So.
Well, you know, your minds go to mush. And, again, you know, lots of people take me to task when I say I don't want to carry something that has a manual safety that I have to disengage, but it's not only happened to me, but I've seen it happen to so many people where they get under pressure and they miss the safety, and they think they're never going to do it. You know, they think they're just never going to do it, and even go into a competition match, go to an IDPA match and shoot that, and you'll see people do it there.
Well, and you know, been there, done that, because I remember a while back you had put out a podcast and you were kind of mentioning that exact subject, and I did a video and I posted it on our YouTube and I kind of sent it to you and I posted it on the forum and I showed when I clear this area I swipe my safety. Well, that's always been in practice and in training. Nobody's ever put me under pressure with a sidearm.
Right.
And you guys did that, and you made me fail that exercise.
And let me ask you both a question. If you're in a situation where someone's attacking you, don't you think you're going to feel a little pressure?
A little bit.
Oh, just a tad.
Yeah. And so that's the thing. You can practice something 1,500 times, but unless you're getting put under pressure or people are asking you to perform instantly, and you're not used to performing something instantly, it's a whole different ballgame.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, I really appreciated both you and Ben and the class instructor level advice that you guys gave to each individual shooter. You know, and you got it. For folks that are listening out there, don't ever go to a class with the chip on your shoulder that you know everything, because Joe and I are experienced shooters. Go there with an open mind and understand that you're going to this to make yourself better and be open to the advice and the instruction that you're getting. That's a lot of problems that we've had with folks. Just at our level here, we've had folks, and these are folks that are prior military, you know, that have the wrong finger, have the wrong finger placement on the trigger, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and we've helped them out, but you've got to be open to that. You know, and Ben called me out. I mean, just about every run I did, Ben would call me out and pull me aside, and he always rendered me some excellent advice. You know, I took that in stride, and I'm trying to file that away in my Rolodex in my head, you know, so for me to apply that for the next time. You know, and I get, to me, that's worth every penny I spend to go to a class. You know, that's a takeaway I'm getting, and it's stuff that I just try to burn in my memory and then try to apply it to the next time I go through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Dave. What did you guys think about the stuff I taught on body mechanics and letting your body do and go the direction and do the things it's supposed to do that it wants to do and not fighting against it?
Okay, I've got a really good take on that because I noticed that the next day. That was one of the big differences between the way you guys taught us to shoot and move versus the way we were shooting and moving. We learned to shoot and move in the military. So we were in a squat, in a crouch, and we were, you know, you and Ben both mentioned that when we were doing that, the reason that we were doing it is so we didn't hop when we walked.
Right, right.
Well, something I took away from it was, we're both military. We learn to march, so therefore we don't hop when we walk. So with the instruction you guys brought up on that, that changed my view. I'm not necessarily going to squat as much as I did before, because if I'd have done that whole class, in a slight crouch, I'd have been dead the next day between my legs, my thighs, and my back.
That's a good point.
But doing it the way it was, everything was natural. When we holstered and we did a couple of the left and right drills, it was a lot more natural. One of them, you guys were giving me a hard time because instead of just doing it the way you said, I kind of overdid it. And you guys kind of picked on me. It was kind of funny and it was a joke, but I actually had a little trouble controlling what I was doing. And then I went back to what you guys were showing, which again is it's kind of what we were doing, but you guys gave us a different take on it.
Yeah. And by the way, we don't really pick on anybody to where we're making fun of you. We just give you good constructive criticism.
Right. And it wasn't taken bad. It was, you know, we spent, you know, the day before, you know, at the hotel, because we all stayed at the same hotel, and, you know, getting to know each other and picking on each other. So, no, it was good-hearted, definitely.
I like what you said about you two were trained to shoot in the military. And there's nothing wrong with military training, nothing wrong with law enforcement training. But the military in particular, most citizens, most civilians are not going to find themselves in a military situation when they're having to use their handgun to defend themselves.
Right.
And so sometimes the movement's different. It's a lot different. You know, a lot of people want to try to move if they have military training like they did when they were in the service. But sometimes, you know, your attacker's not going to give you that opportunity. In most of the time in the civilian world, what we learn when studying gunfights, it's the bad guy that dictates how the fight starts.
Right.
It's not... You know, you, the good guy, don't get to dictate. Now, hopefully, with proper training, you get to dictate how the fight ends.
Right. Exactly.
But you don't get to determine how it starts. And so, when I was explaining about body mechanics, about letting your body do what it wants to do with your feet in the direction that you want to travel, and, you know, even changing your grip over to the half-homie grip and stuff like that, that's because that's natural.
That's what I was just going to go there, Bob. I said, you know, I was telling Joe, I said, I've got to look that up in a field manual, see where full homie and half homie is.
We call it gangster.
That totally stuck, and I'm going to tell you what, that is a huge takeaway just off of that phrase, because, you know, when you had us all point at the target and look at our hand when we were doing the right-handed movement, I mean, My shooting ability at that point greatly increased.
Oh, good.
You know, because it was so natural. I didn't have the recoil. You know, the recoil was a lot different than had you been squared up, you know what I'm saying, with one hand. And, you know, and Ben was commenting on me how much better I did it on supposedly my weak side, my left side. Well, I practiced that a lot. You know, and Joe and I we've always tucked. We've always fired even our rifles. We tuck. We use our diaphragm as part of our stability platform.
Sure.
You know, and that always works. And so that's why going left-handed, I did just absolutely great. You know, right-handed, I'm going to practice some more. You know, I was still on target, you know, but not near as much as I wanted to be. And... But yeah, when you came off with a half homie versus full homie, I thought that was hilarious. But it's things like that that stick, and you put that, you apply that, and you realize it does work.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does work. And in our 2-day classes and in the level 2 class, we get farther and deeper into one-handed shootings and or one-handed shooting and one-handed manipulations as well.
Yeah, now on the, like Dave was talking about the homie, you guys are giving us instruction on the half homie, and I was going left, and I pulled, and I was a little over-rushed, and I went all the way to full homie. And I wasn't as accurate. It was very natural, but it wasn't as accurate. And the reason that I didn't actually consider, because I'd never done that one-handed.
Right.
I've done it two-handed, you know, in a building, clearing a building. But doing it on an open range like that, it was very hard to control because instead of my weapon recoiling up, it recoiled left.
Well, that, yeah. And it recoils left, and so you learned to manage that, didn't you?
Well, what it was I'd overgone it and went to full homie, and I should have gone to half homie.
Right.
It would have been more natural recovery.
Yeah, it would have been. See, and this is good to hear you guys say this, and I want listeners to know that I didn't brief these guys or tell these guys what to say before we got on this call. But these two guys are experienced shooters, and I knew it within about the first 10 minutes of the class that you guys were experienced shooters, but yet they've taken away a couple things. And you said something, Joe, I think it was you that said it in the beginning of this interview, never think that you're too good to take a training class, because there's always going to be somebody somewhere that's going to have either another way of doing something or a little bit better way of doing something.
Yeah. I mean, Ben, you know, between what you were doing and what Ben was doing, I took away a bunch of little, you know, for us, it was technique was different. Ben had said a couple of things that I really got a lot out of. You know, how many classes has Bob Main taught? You know, a couple hundred classes?
Oh, no,
I haven't. I'd love to take Mad 40 classes.
No, I haven't taught that many. I've probably trained for about 175 to 200 hours in actual training classes, but no, I don't know how many I've taught, but it's not a couple hundred.
Well, yeah, but you've been teaching with Ben for a while, but
yeah.
You know, you also, as an instructor, still go take more classes.
Oh, yeah, as a matter of fact, looking at possibly in June taking another Suarez class, Suarez International class. John Payne's teaching that. I've taken a lot of courses with John. He's awesome. It is June 13th and 14th in Lubbock, and it's a 2-day class. It's $350, and there's a pretty good chance that I'm going to be there for that. I've actually taken this class before. It used to be called Advanced Close Range Gunfighting, and I'll put a link in the show notes. But it's a phenomenal class, and I never mind taking a class more than once, because who can pick up everything the first time?
Well, that's a really good point right there, and that's what I was going to jump in on, was even if you take a class, don't be afraid to take it twice.
Right.
You know, one of the drills that you and Ben had us doing was some of the movement drills, and in your class, we had the freedom to, once we got into the second half of the day, we were doing our drills, and then Ben and you had said, you know, we're moving along pretty good. If you won't want to run the drill again, go ahead. I ran the left and drill time 4 times, at least.
Right.
You know, and then everybody picked on me because they thought I had an ammo sponsor, because every target got 13 rounds in it before I reloaded.
Yeah, that was me. I was wondering who your ammo sponsor was. You know, it must be, I tell you what, because you were jamming it, but that's pretty good. You were shooting a lot, but that's okay. You were getting some good practice, and you weren't out of control. You were handling it just fine.
Well, to me, it was about checking out what my percentages were. I was pushing myself, trying to get control of my weapon, and getting suppression on my bad guy.
Yeah. Hey, I want to mention something, too. CRG3, Advanced Gunfighting, that John Payne's teaching for Suarez. One of the nice things, and I'm looking forward to this again, they're going to go into threat-focused point shooting. You know, I know it's a bad word, but threat-focused point shooting, you know, sight-focused shooting, so there's going to be a lot of that. Also, one of the things I like is a little bit change in the curriculum. They're going to shoot from one-handed, behind cover, even confined area shooting. That's something that a lot of people don't get a chance to practice. Is what's going to happen? How are you going to shoot in a crowded area, in a confined area? You could find yourself easily in that situation.
Yeah.
So
we've tried some of that under vehicle shooting stuff, which we did not learn at this class.
No.
But we've tried that, and there are some surprises when you try that.
Yes, there are a lot of surprises. So, tell me a little bit about what do you guys practice when you're practicing at home?
Shoot, move, communicate.
Yeah, shoot, move, communicate. We've done house clearing. One of the big things when you're inside a building that you don't understand is even when you're using your ear protection, the concussion is a lot more than you think.
Yep.
So we've done that. We've got a video out where we show that a 12 gauge does not pattern in a house.
Yep, that's right.
Dave ran a shotgun on one of his runs, and it's up on our YouTube, and it shows that a 12 gauge home defense shotgun patterns about 2 inches. So there is none of that stuff like you talked about earlier at Academy where the guy says just point and shoot. No. No, Dave, and one of his targets during that exercise, Dave actually missed his target. He peppered it, but he physically missed it.
Yep, that's right.
And on other ones, yeah, he was clearing the target off the wall. But there's that. We've done a lot of forward and backward shooting, mostly walking forward into targets.
Right.
Some of the moving backward was a little unique.
We've done a little bit. Kind of like what we did at the range last weekend, Bob. We went, you know, shooting from cover, like a hallway scenario. We've done a lot of that, you know, and you know the technique that we were using at the gun range with you and Ben, and versus what we were doing here. I mean, there's a lot of similarities, but then again, there's a lot of differences. And because you don't want to expose yourself necessarily to the bad guy, you just want to be able to catch just a piece of him and know where he's at and then engage him.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've done a lot of that here. The house clearing one we did was, we were just fortunate enough to get a place that was actually donated to us before it got demolished. And I got a lot out of that, and like I said, we used, Joe said, you know, the shotgun, we used that as an example. I was just running birdshot.
Right.
And, you know, a Mossberg 500 with an 18.5-inch barrel. And, you know, the reality check that folks got out of that was, you know, exactly how much spread you're going to get shooting diagonally across a normal-sized room.
And you said birdshot. What was it, 7 or 8 birdshot?
It was 7.5.
7.5 birdshot, and you, it didn't pattern, but what, maybe 2-3 inches?
Well, I got across it when I shot diagonally across the room. I mean, it may have been to the point of the size of a dinner plate.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't as much as people think. I mean,
okay.
All my shots were pretty much headshots all the way through. I mean, I'm pretty good with a shotgun, you know, and Ben saw the video. Joe showed him the video when we were there Friday evening, and Ben told me, he said, what, and he actually gave me some instruction on that, which was cool, you know, and about switching shoulders, you know, shooting left-handed, because there was one place that I had to clear. I had a target in one room, and there's a target around the right corner. It was really a tight room. It was a small bathroom. And I found out the hard way that you come around there with a shotgun, try to roll it up and shoot it, you get hit in the mouth. It don't feel good.
No, it doesn't.
We didn't laugh about that, by the way.
Yeah. Hey, I want...
Here's another one that we came out with on that one was, and a lot of what we do, we're going back after listening to your podcast. And, you know, I know that you're not a big fan of the guy at Academy who tells somebody, just get a shotgun, it works.
Yeah.
Our old school thinking was that, you know, a shotgun with birdshot, it'll take him out, you know, yada, yada, yada. It won't over-penetrate. Wrong.
That's true.
Now, of course, interior walls are typically not insulated. Exterior walls are. Dave put beautiful 12 or 1 inch 12 gauge holes in the exterior wall. We saw light when Dave was done.
Really?
So do not think that your typical wood siding, sheetrock, and insulation is going to stop birdshot.
No, and generally it doesn't stop most high-powered handgun rounds either.
No, no, but there was a lot of misnomers that we learned in that one.
Yeah, well, and you know, guess what often does get lodged in the side of a house in the wall. Your 223, your AR-15.
Yeah, because it'll spin and roll or whatever.
Yeah. It's generally not going to penetrate home walls as much as a 12 gauge or even a handgun.
We need to get another house and try that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Now,
let's do it at your house.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, yeah, let's go shoot. In fact, I'll come up for that when we'll practice clearing Dave's house.
There you go.
You guys get past my wife, you're on your own.
Hey, I want to go back to something. You guys are both shooting XD45s, and I got to say, I had a chance to shoot both of them and shoot more than just a couple shots. Those are nice. I like them.
I've been very happy with mine. I couldn't even count how many rounds I've got through it, and it's been a very, very reliable pistol. I'm a big Springfield fan anyway.
Yeah, we both are.
You know, it's a very, very easy weapon to use. It's comfortable. It fits my hand. I mean, I've seen it. It's like a Ford and Chevy thing between the Glock and the Springfield. You know, to me, the Springfield has a better feel to it for me personally. It's a great weapon. Now they came out with a compact that I'm not real impressed with the grips on it. It's almost like holding a cheese grater.
I think it's the XDM.
You're talking about the XDM, I think.
Yeah,
I fired one of those, and that was just, it was terrible. You know, it was just the grips. The weapon functioned flawlessly, but, you know, the grips on it were just terrible.
Unless you're wearing gloves, it was not a fun shooting gun. Now, right now, I happen to be carrying a Springfield XD9 Subcompact Mod 2.
Yeah. How do you like that?
It's a good shooting gun.
How do you like that gun?
I really like it. I'm not a big fan of subcompacts, only because the magazines are usually too short, but this one came with an extended magazine and a 13 round, so I really like it. Now, one of the other things, the exercises that I did while I was at the class, since we're talking about different guns, I think I was a little unusual. I brought half of my handguns. So okay. I had an XD45 full size. I had a 1911 full size. I had a Ruger P89.
Mosquito.
And then just for giggles, I brought the Sig Mosquito out in 22. But I really preferred the XD over my 1911. I had more issues with the 1911. Ben challenged me even harder with the Ruger P89. Because it's a decock model, and he made me decock it. So when all of a sudden we went into doing some really fast drill, that the first shot had to be from double action.
Right.
I'll do that a lot more to get used to that.
Okay, good. Well, how if you were going to carry that gun, how would you carry it?
I would probably carry it decocked. I agree, but usually again we're shooting at targets on a range, and I shoot it. Knowing the first round is going to be harder, and then my follow-up shots are, you know, they're a lot easier. But I need to practice that from the double action trigger so I can be more accurate, because I was not accurate on my first shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what kind of issues were you having with your 1911?
It's heavier than my XD on the front end, which is good and bad. I just turned it into the gunsmith. I'm getting the fiber optic True Glow sights put on it, which is just like my XD. I was having a hard time with my front sight. I bought it back in like 90, and it is a military spec, military sight gun. So it's got the milled in front sight, and it's just steel. So I was having a problem finding my front sight. For those people who have a handgun and they don't have a front sight that's easy to see, get a dot or a true glow or something that's easy to find that front sight. Because that was really one of my biggest problems, is finding that front sight.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, guys, you know what? Both of us are, I mean, all three of us were preppers too. And from a prepping standpoint, how important is it to know how to use your firearms?
Oh, when it hits the fan, I mean, that's, everybody knows that, you know, food storage and water is up there, but defending yourself is also up there. Because without being able to defend yourself, you're going to be either giving your stuff away and getting killed or just giving your stuff away. I've always been a defend myself mindset since, well, Joe has too, since we grew up in Southern California. You know, we've seen a lot of stuff go down out there. But from a prepper standpoint, I mean, you know, everybody gets a little freaked out because a big brother's watching this and watching that. I'm not so much. I used to. I'm really like, you know what? Probably already on several lists because I'm a veteran, number one. I'm Joe. So, I mean, you know, I don't care anymore, you know, about all that. You know, it's just one of those things. You know, I try to look forward and do the best I can and try to think of what could happen. You know, situational awareness. You know, so that's one of the things that you guys discussed about a little bit. We touched base on during lunch. Situational awareness, number one, and being able to de-escalate a situation. You know, be a bigger man and walk away. You know, rather than having to draw.
Right.
You know, that's important. You know, it's just not, we're not all out here CHLs and just gung-ho about drawing our weapon. That's the last resort, you know, on needing to do if you have to do it. And then you got to live with the consequences the rest of your life, you know. But from a prepper standpoint, I'm, you know, being able to draw a weapon quickly if you have to, being able to function the weapon, being able to navigate any malfunction issues, which we also covered in the class, I got a lot out of. Reloading while on the move. I broke a really bad habit of catching my magazine.
Uh-huh.
I broke that habit right away and just finally, you know, drop it. Drop it and move. You know, drop it, reload, and keep going. And, you know, all that stuff, putting all that stuff together, you know, and continue practicing. We're going to do a lot more practicing with the reloading thing too here, you know, changing magazines. You know, it was just so many takeaways for me with that because I was actually able to do that. But I did get to appreciate one thing, not meaning to get off subject a little bit, but I like having a 13 round mag and one in the pipe.
Yes, that is nice.
I was watching guys reloading, and I'm shooting twice as much. I'm getting more rounds down range faster because I have a higher capacity.
And that's what I found with my 1911 was, you know, I could do, with my XD, I could do what I would have had to do, you know, a reload for, I could do it in one mag and then change.
Yeah. And I noticed the same thing in watching students. Now, I got to compliment some students because some of them were shooting their little car PM9s or their Smith & Wesson M&P shields, and that's because those are their carry guns, probably what they carry most of the time. And I'm a big proponent of train with what you carry. So I want to compliment them, but you notice that they were having to reload so much more than everybody else. So there are trade-offs.
Right. Now, for me, I want to answer the question that Dave just answered. As preppers, I'm a big fan of course, when you become a prepper, everybody, of course, the guys always start out with the guns.
Right.
You can have all the guns and all the toys and all the buzzes and all the whistles and all the ammo. And then when you finally get to doing the food prepping and that kind of stuff, just like we took your class, I do canning, and I do long-term food storage, and I do this, but I take other people's classes. Well, when I've got all of this food and all of this storage, and I've done all of this canning, and I've got all of my prep stored up, if I'm not proficient with my weapon, I'm storing it for somebody else.
Good point.
So everything needs to be done in balance. And that is one thing I teach and that we teach here, is that your preps need to be balanced with your weapons and this and that. And this was a really, like I said, we think we're kind of advanced, but then again, you showed us techniques and you ran us through drills, you and Ben did, that we'd never done with more pressure. So therefore we took this training to the next level, like we do our other preps. And now we're going to focus on that.
You know, Joe, I got to thank you for putting that in a way I've never heard it put before. If you don't know how to properly defend yourself, all your preps are just for somebody else.
And don't think for a minute there aren't people out there that are involved in the prepper community, the prepper world, that are scoping. That's exactly right. That are out there because they're going to use you. Their goal is, if things go down, they're the ones that are going to go buy all the guns because they're going to come take your stuff. That's solely their intent. You know, sadly, Joe and I have run across a couple folks like that.
Yeah, their goal is they call it marking depots.
They call it what?
They were marking depots, marking places where they're stuck.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we rarely kind of flag those, but it is. Everything's well balanced, and when you get to the next level of this, that's great. You know, everything, you need to take everything to the next level. Whatever you think you're good at, you're not as good as you think. Go to another class and get humbled.
Right.
Humbled means, ooh, I need to work on this.
Right.
And even for as much as we shoot, and we are blessed in that your class did something that I think for a lot of the other people, they don't have a range where you can holster.
Right.
And you can move and shoot. Everybody shoots at paper. We've been shooting at stuff and moving for a while, so we're blessed by that. Most ranges won't let you do that.
Right. Few people have that luxury.
Right, right. And you took us to a range where we could do that and we could maximize the training. So to us, that brought it up the next level. And you guys showed us techniques that we hadn't seen or little tweaks on what we had been doing to get another opinion and go, hey, that works better than what we're doing. I mean, me and Dave sat in the back of, you know, in the back when other people were going down range, and Dave's like, dude, that works better than what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, and did you notice that you also learn from watching what other people are doing?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. And I'm going to tell you what, I don't know how many guys were in the class or listeners, but kudos to all you guys. You know, I really saw some really sharp people, and everybody was safety conscious. And the fact that we covered that right out of the gate, and I felt like everybody had everybody's back, you know, through the whole course. You know, made some new friends. When we worked together, when we were doing the advance and retreat type movement while shooting, you know, where you had your battle buddy behind you with his hand on your collar, you know, pick somebody that you didn't come there with. That was great because I got everybody to interact more. And I was really impressed with that. And basically the camaraderie with folks, I had other shooters giving me advice. You know, other guys that were, you know, well up there in handgun shooting. And I listened to it. I mean, I go through my ears and my eyes open. I went there to learn, you know. And I really appreciated that. I mean, I told them, thank you. I, you know, you can't go in there and worry about getting your feelings hurt because none of it is done ugly, for one. And everything is constructive. And everybody wants to make everybody better. That's the ultimate goal. You know,
yeah.
That's what we all went there for.
You know, Dave, that was one of the things that I was surprised when I took my very first class and when I went to my very first competition match. I always remember, even though I learned from the instructor, I also learned from the other students who were there. They taught me things. And I remember my first IDPA match, which I'm a big fan that people should, whenever you get a chance, shoot IDPA or USPSA. You know, there really aren't any instructors at those matches. You have safety officers. But what's really cool is you've got other shooters, some of them very, very good that have been doing it a long time, that are very nice people, and they'll give you a lot of good pointers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and grab onto those and run with them.
I mean,
you got a man that you know has a lot more experience than you, and he's offering you advice. You know, I'm one of those folks, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. I won't take the advice and I'm going to run with it.
Yeah.
You know, all he's doing is helping me make me better.
Exactly, yeah. And that's why I encourage people to get out of their comfort zone and go do something that they're not used to doing, whether it's learning how to shoot a handgun or whether it's learning how to can food or whether it's learning how to cook better or, you know, wilderness survival, medical. It doesn't matter. You know, just get out of your comfort zone. Learn something different.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, you don't have to be an expert at everything, but be proficient at it.
I've got something, too, that I kind of noticed was, one, you made us battle buddy up with somebody we didn't come with. That was awesome, because me and Super Dave know how we move. We know our body language. So, therefore, we had to work with somebody that didn't know our body language. That was good, because it made the training a lot better. Another thing is, we're seeing a lot of this stuff with older eyes, and we've got experience. Some of our experience and some of our techniques are not as good as they could be, because, of course, we all bring faults to the table.
Yeah.
I give kudos. There were two young shooters out there. I think they were brothers.
They were.
Oh, my God. Could those boys listen to exactly what you said, brought nothing to the table, did exactly what you told them, and they outshot us hands down.
Yeah, they were 16 and 18 years old, and they were amazing.
Yeah, I came home and my son had asked me, "Hey, you were shooting. Can we go shoot?" Yes, we're going to do a lot more shooting.
Yeah,
because their dad shot with them a lot, and these boys they were awesome shooters.
They were outstanding, and you know what? I watched them and just their range safety and the way they handle themselves. You could tell they're very, very safe. Both of them were very, very safe. Very accurate and very fast, you know. And I told them both. I said, "You guys impressed me. I mean, I just hands down, I'm impressed."
Yeah, we told them that at dinner after the class. You know, we did. You know, in the first active run, once we got past the, you know, get everybody familiar with it, we both watched them. I'm like, "Oh yeah, they're Instructor Zero fans."
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not going to mention their names on the air because I don't have the permission to, but they know who they are, and I'm sure they're listening and their dad's listening. So congratulations, kudos to all three of you. It was a very impressive sight.
Yeah, and then there was also one other shooter. We did a top shot at the end, just kind of burning some time and burning some ammo, and that guy was a great shooter too.
Oh yeah,
and there were some really impressive people there. And I think we got a lot out of it. And like you said, I mean, when we would go down range and we'd shoot and the instructors and the safety officers were working with the active shooters, the other shooters were in the back and we're going back and forth, you know, like you're saying, you know, with your competition shooters. People who like to shoot aren't afraid to tell you, you know, what they see. And you kind of, one of your sayings is, you know, take the best and leave the rest.
Yeah.
You know, try this, try that. Hey, try this. Okay. So we came up with all kinds of stuff. One of the other things I found was magazine positioning was off.
Yeah.
My magazine positioning was off, and I saw other people that had excellent magazine positioning for what they were doing, and I saw other people that had magazine positioning worse than mine.
And bringing that up, I got on Amazon when I got home and ordering a different magazine pouch just for that reason, because the XD mag holder, basically you're putting your magazine in, if your magazine's a dual, if you put them in two directions, that's what they're intended for. And I was really struggling with that. So that was also a takeaway, because, okay, I got to change this. This is not working for me.
What did you order, Dave?
I got to look it up. It's I can't even think. I'm drawing a blank on it right now, Bob. It's a single, just from what I conceal. Because yeah. I've always concealed, I never carried an extra mag. Another takeaway.
Yeah, that's one I teach is, like,
you know,
why would you carry an automatic that reloads very quickly if you don't carry a reload?
Well, I just did. I never have, you know, or just you throw it in your pocket. But to be honest with you, I've always just carried my pistol with a full mag in it. You know, and you guys brought that to light. And then I'm like, duh, you know, the what ifs.
Right.
You know? I'm like, I'd have a really good plastic and metal hammer at that point, I guess. You know? So, But yeah, I'll have to shoot you an email on it, Bob, and show you which one I'm looking at. I can't remember what the name of it was. I got on there and looked at it and put it on my card on Amazon, and I'm going to order it up this weekend. But it's just a single. They have it for doubles too, and I was actually looking at, they have some that got, clips that clip them shut, and like, that's not going to work.
No.
I want to be able to get to that quickly. So, I mean, there's all kinds of different things out there, and until you actually go through a course like this where you have to access that magazine quickly and reload, you know, you'll find that some of that stuff that may look cool is not cool.
I think you probably noticed in the malfunction drills that we were doing the most important reason to carry an extra magazine.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Yes, sir. Like I said, that was another eye-opener. I said, there's numerous takeaways I got.
Yeah.
And that was a big one right there. I'm like, dang, I haven't been carrying a magazine, you know.
people think if I've got 13 to 17 rounds, I'm good.
Yeah.
Maybe if you got a bad mag or a bad round or whatever. Here was the one I got from Ben. If you think you need to do something, it needs to already be done.
Yep.
And that, I really took that away. You know, better to make, you know, a bad decision than no decision at all.
Yeah.
I was wearing 5'11" style tactical pants, and kind of what we went to the class with was, where would we normally wear? And I happen to normally wear those at work, so I wore them. But on one of my thigh pockets, it's got a Velcro flap, and I was fighting that Velcro flap.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a concealed situation, my flap is closed, covering my magazine. When I went to grab that magazine, it was not as fast as I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Having the tactical clothing, you know, it works for a bunch of different stuff. But having a magazine pouch, you know, or on your hip or something, was much faster than going to the pocket.
Isn't it amazing how a 16 or an 18 round gun can be a 2-shot piece of junk if it malfunctions?
Right.
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 You know, so if it malfunctions and you don't have a way to clear it and get a fresh magazine in there, you got basically nothing.
Right.
Right.
Now, here's an exercise that we started that actually you guys did there as well, was, and you guys did it a little lighter than what we do, and we like to pick on each other, snap caps.
Uh-huh.
Whatever brand you want to use. We load each other's magazines.
Mm-hmm.
Now, during the class, you know, we loaded a snap cap every here and there. And but because of the class and everybody was, you know, we're trying to get in line, we kind of knew where it was. Have your buddy load your magazine, and don't just stop at one snap cap. Load two or three in a high-capacity magazine, and your buddy will have to learn his function drills a lot faster.
Yeah, you can. I love it when you can see people flinch when they press the trigger on the snap cap. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we've solved some problems for people who were shooting low because they were anticipating the recoil, and we fixed that with snap caps. Snap caps, it's, I don't know, what are they, $10 for like 5 of them or whatever? And
15.
Yeah, 15, whatever. It is well worth it.
I thought shooting low was either either a fault of the sights or the wind or the trigger or the grip. Or all kinds of things. It's not the shooter, is it?
The sun, you know. Whatever.
Yeah, the sun. Yeah. No, Joe. You know what? That's a very good technique. You know, have somebody else load your magazine, put a couple snap caps in there, so you don't know where they are. And for people who don't know, if they're kind of new, don't know what a snap cap is, it's fake ammunition. Your gun it'll actually chamber, but obviously since it's fake ammo, it's not going to fire. And it helps you with malfunction drills, and it also lets you know if you're jerking the trigger, flinching the trigger, or whatever.
Yeah. And we've gone to snap caps. Now, one of the things we've been doing for a long time is when we do a moving drill, your safety guide is walking down range with your shooter. Sometimes has a camcorder with him.
Right.
Or there's a third man running a camcorder. So we can replay what went, we kind of do a after action review. So we can show what went right and what went wrong.
There you go.
I mean, just any, you know, the NFL's been doing instant replay for years, and the professional football players will look at past games to see what went right and what went wrong.
Exactly.
We apply that to this.
Right. Well, and I'm going to make a shameless plug. For those of you who are members of our Shooters Club, you are going to see videos of people doing it right, and you're going to see videos of people doing it wrong, because a lot of the videos come straight from the classes that we teach, so you'll be able to learn from other people's experiences, so I just thought I'd throw that in there.
We're not going to be in those, are we?
No, you guys are not.
Wow, okay. Well, that's because we, you know, hit Bob's phone.
We have a lot of videos up there from prior classes, but only one real short clip from this most recent class.
Yeah, we got some videos too, because on our page, on our Facebook page, I posted one of Dave's moving runs.
That was the first one. We were doing the right-handed half homie. You know, and I actually watching that, I got like, man, my accuracy sucks. But I mean, I can hear. I made some hits, but one of my friends commented. He said about that poor berm, because you can see dirt hit. You know, the dirt popping up off the berm behind the target. You know, and that was my first run, and I hadn't shot like that, and so all I did is I went through that, went through it, and as I went through it, I got better and better and better. And I actually started finding out that in that situation, I wasn't even using my sights. You know, I was getting so comfortable
point shooting
that I was getting more and more accurate with it. And I was getting, you know, my confidence level, like I said, just went through the roof.
Well, how about that? See, that's another thing. I didn't set Dave up to say that, but point shooting, you're not supposed to do that now.
Yeah, that's a class we really want to take, because we took that, and when you and Ben had brought that up, you'd mentioned that was kind of a lead into the point shooting class that you guys do. And we're going to start practicing that here. So therefore, when we go to point shooting, hopefully we don't embarrass ourselves.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we don't really do a point shooting class, but we incorporate a lot of point shooting techniques into one of the other classes that we teach, which is the level 2, the advanced class. Yeah, you know, the thing is, Dave, and you found yourself not always getting on your sights, but you were making decent hits, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
You know,
you guys showed us a lot there. Just again, you know, for people who, you know, who look at going to these classes, I mean, like I said, we consider ourselves, you know, a little bit of advanced shooters, but we took a lot away, and it was a lot of the little things.
Yeah.
You know, that just, when you put them all together, there's a big basket of knowledge we brought home.
Yeah. Well, good. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, I think in the essence of time, this is a good time to wrap it up. I just want to say I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate you guys coming to the class and the support that you give me and this interview today, and it's great, and we're going to have to do this again sometime.
Well, I already told the wife, I said that when you guys go to the next class, I'm game. I want to go. Because I got this much out of this one. You know, I feel like I'm just improving just by leaps and bounds, and I'm going to take, you know, my takeaways, I'm going to apply every time we have range day here, and, you know, it was well worth it.
Yeah, thank you. Well, if we don't schedule something else up in Dallas, consider coming down to San Antonio in November for level 2.
We could do that.
Well, it'll be nice and cool down there in November.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, it's going to be the weekend before Thanksgiving, and Chaz Murray from the Road Gunner podcast is also going to be one of the instructors. And Tracy Thronberg, she's pretty good. She's with, I'm pretty sure she's with KRT training up in Austin, and she's also a Mag 40 staff instructor. So she's got some good stuff that she's going to put in there for us as well.
And I've already got vacation scheduled that time, so that works out just perfect.
Yeah, it's the weekend before Thanksgiving, the Saturday and Sunday before Thanksgiving.
And then to throw, you know, with this class, I want to throw another thank you to your add-on safety instructor, your range safety guy,
Jason. Yeah,
he was on my side half the time, and every time I got done, he was like, do this, try this, adjust here, yeah. Move your hold here.
Yeah, Jason.
And every time I went down range between him and Ben or you, because you guys were rotating out, so we were getting different points of view from everybody, and we walked away with quite a bit. He was really good. We went to dinner that night, and I saw he had bigger raccoon eyes than the rest of us. The sun beat us down that day.
Yeah.
Jason's excellent. I know he's listening. Jason, once again, thank you very much. Not only has he taken several classes that Ben and I have taught, but he's also, I think he's been one of the students in John Payne Suarez International class, and he's taken a lot of classes that Chris Rainey teaches right there at Proactive Defense in Argyle.
Okay.
Yeah. He was great. All you guys were great. If you're thinking about it, it's too late. Go ahead and take it.
Yeah.
Because it's worth it.
Every bit of it.
Thanks, gentlemen. You guys have a good evening. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it. You have a good one.
All right. Take care. Okay, thank you, Joe and Dave, for donating your time. That was really awesome. Hey, in the opening segment, I made a mistake, and I said, you know what, if the right to keep and bear arms in Maryland was more encouraged by the citizens and the property owners, I meant to say if it was more encouraged by the state government. In other words, if the state government didn't restrict it so much, then maybe the people, the property owners in Baltimore, would have been able to defend themselves better. That's what I meant to say. If it was encouraged more, and if it was legally allowed more so in the state of Maryland. Gun control just doesn't work, folks. It just doesn't work. It's proven over and over again. All right, Joe and Dave, thanks again quite a bit. You know what? These guys, they have a group called Northeast Texas Preppers, and I'll put a link. You should join their Facebook page, and you should join some of the other things that they've got going on the internet and so forth and connect with these guys. I really appreciate them. Talking a little bit about how experienced shooters are going to train in the future, what they take away, and kind of, I hope it gave you an everyday guy's perspective on training, and more so what you get from training. Because a lot of people really resist training. I don't know why. I get criticized from people for talking about training too much on this show. Actually, you know, I haven't talked about training much in the last several weeks. I haven't really gotten into it much. I had one person say he's not going to listen to my show anymore because he thinks my show is just one big advertisement for training ever since I got into being an instructor. Really? Man, I got to tell you, between the guests that I bring on and some of the other topics that I cover myself, I like to think I'm putting out a lot of good informative information that has nothing to do with training. Even if you don't train at all, you're going to get a lot from my show just based on some of the information that is generated out there. So I'm not really quite sure where that person is coming from. But anyway, this is a free country. You have the right to listen to this show or the right not to listen to this show. Isn't that great? Gosh, I hope this freedom remains for forever, really. But boy, I tell you, there are some things in this country that make what little bit of hair that I have on the back of my head stand up, because, man, I just don't like some of the things that are going on, but that's a whole another subject. Speaking of classes, you know what? I got to say, the health situation with my wife is not so good right now. She's experiencing some pretty significant challenges from her ALS diagnosis. It's been a little over 2 years. So I don't think I'm going to be able to do any more traveling than I'm already scheduled to do this year. Pretty soon coming up, in fact, next weekend, I'll be up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota with Ben, teaching Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced, which is a 2-day class on the 16th and 17th of May. Hurry up if you're a last minute or get signed up for that. We're going to Ohio in September to all of you Ohio listeners, or even if you're close to Ohio within a few hours. It's going to be worth it. We're going to definitely make it worth it for you to spend the weekend with us. Come train with us, and we're going to
the Squim, Washington area, a couple hours west of Seattle, on the Olympic Peninsula in August. And then Chaz Murray from the Road Gunner podcast and Tracy Thronberg from Austin, Texas, a couple of good trainers, are going to join us, join Ben and I. There are going to be four instructors in November in San Antonio for Beyond Concealed Carry Level 2. That's our enhanced class. These are all two-day classes coming up, and I think you're going to enjoy it. You get to spend two full days with us. That's it. That's it. That's all I'm going to put on the schedule, at least for me. I don't know. Ben might do some other things, or there's some other, you know, things that might be happening. But as far as me, that's where I'm going to keep it for the rest of 2015, because I have to, because family comes first, my wife comes first, and, you know, hopefully I can stay healthy enough to be able to take care of her. That is the primary reason why the good Lord blessed me with a second chance. I beat cancer, and in a couple of weeks I'm going to have a couple more tests done to make sure that the cancer is gone. Praise God that it's gone. Keep me in your prayers that He's going to keep it gone, and that I can focus my attention on taking care of my wife in her time of need. So it's going to be all I can do to sneak away and do the classes that are on the schedule, but I plan on being at every one of them, folks. So don't forego signing up just because there's a chance I might not be there, because I will be there. Okay? With that said, don't forget about signing up for our Shooters Club if you want to support the show. And also, you don't have to spend any extra money to support my show if you just make your purchases, your Amazon purchases, through my Amazon store. Yeah, I know it's a couple of extra steps that you have to do to make an Amazon purchase, but please think about me next time you buy something on Amazon. I am a member of the Amazon Associates or Affiliates program, and so I get a small little fee, little commission. Not a fee. I get a small little commission for everything that you purchase, and it helps support my show. And hey, you know what? You're going to buy the products anyway, so it's not like you have to spend any extra money. But if you do want to come to a class or take a look at our wonderful shooting instructional videos that we have, join the Shooters Club, come to a class, and don't forget about my Amazon store. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. And you know what? Recently, I heard some clicks when they were expecting bangs at training class. And they are loud sounds. I'll catch you next week. Goodbye.